This is Sierra Doe with Municipal Sustainable Energy Forum, and our discussion today is talking about some of the recent developments in community choice energy in different parts of the country. We have four different presenters. David Dupereau out in California is an attorney. Lynn Arthur will go next from Peak Power. Then we'll have Peter Millman at Peter's People's Action for Clean Energy, Connecticut, and Samuel Golding, Community Choice Partners, will be our last presenter today. So, David, why don't you start us out?
Thanks, Sierra. Yeah, today is August 27th, 2020. I am calling from California, where the wildfires are subsiding, thankfully, after some just a horrific climate change-induced week or two. Anyhow, since most of you don't know me, I'm going to introduce myself, take a minute. This is my second career. Energy is a second career. I spent decades as a commercial and real estate finance lawyer. I handled large Chapter 11 cases, including the Enron bankruptcy case. I represented the city of Palo Alto's municipal utility in the Enron case, which was fascinating and in my real introduction to energy. Enron sued, as a Chapter 11 debtor, Enron sued Palo Alto for $50 million, also sued Santa Clara, which is now Silicon Valley Power, and sued Snohomish County. And with those three municipal, we brought together those two other municipal utilities, and I was part of the legal team defending them. They were both sued for well over $100 million each. And so that was fascinating. I won't talk much about that, but I learned about energy in that case. I decided to do something about climate change, that that's what I wanted to do. So I went back to law school, Vermont Law School, got my LLM in energy law and policy. As part of that, I did an internship with the Public Utilities Commission in California, worked with some great folks there and liked that. A year and a half ago, as Pacific Gas and Electric was careening towards its second bankruptcy, I worked with TURN, the leading California ratepayer advocate, and was hired and engaged to represent it in the Chapter 11 case. And I did that for a while. It was fascinating as well. But then the commission called and wanted me to join as a senior analyst, and I was sort of torn, decided to go with commission, leaving the law, at least in theory. And so I was in the energy division on the CCA team. I was the lead analyst on the PCIA, the power charge indifference adjustment. That's the exit fee that CCA customers pay to compensate the ratepayers who remain with the utility. So that was my proceeding. I was only there less than a year. I was there from March of 19 to the end of 2019 and had a great experience, learned a lot, met some great people, but ended up was not for me at this point in my career. So I'm independent now. I think of myself as a lawyer, but also an energy, clean energy advocate. So I want to just touch on a number of the issues that are important to CCAs here in California and give just a brief update. Some of you may be very familiar with this, others may not be, but CCAs are sweeping across California. The three big utilities, PG&E, of course, just emerged from bankruptcy, and we can talk about that if others want to. I'm just going to touch on the headlines for each of these issues, and then people can talk about them as we have time. So in PG&E territory, it's just amazing how quickly, since Marin started and Lancaster started, 10 years ago or so, how in the last 5 or 6 years, it's just swept across all around the San Francisco Bay Area, Marin, Sonoma, San Francisco, San Mateo County, Santa Clara County, the city of San Jose, East Bay, which is Alameda County. Just millions and millions of customers transitioning from the big utility to CCAs. 10 million customers in California, and that translates to a lot more individuals, you know, consumers. That's just the customers who have an account with the provider of energy. In San Diego, it's quite an interesting situation. The Sempra, the owner of San Diego Gas and Electric, has expressed its intent, rather than fighting the transition to CCAs, Sempra, at least the corporate parent, has expressed strong interest, and it says it basically intends to do that, to turn over the retail delivery of energy to someone else. They don't want to do it. I think they figure they're not making money at it. They're a big gas company. I think they're happy to do the wholesale part of it, the procurement part of it. But in my working as an analyst with some of the folks at PG&E itself, SDG&E, the utility itself, they didn't seem quite as excited about losing the business that they've been in for their whole careers, but that is in process there. The city of San Diego is moving ahead to form a CCA. The county thought about it, but is backed off for now. When I started at commission a year and a half ago, the only CCA in San Diego County was tiny little Solana Beach. Some other communities are joining with Solana Beach to form a CCA, and the city of San Diego has attracted some other cities within the county to be part of its CCA. So, and then you have the big utility in the middle, Southern California Edison. Los Angeles County has created Clean Power Exchange, formerly the Los Angeles County Power, and that is growing very fast and relatively sophisticated and doing quite well. I worked with Riverside County, Western Community Energy, and some of the other smaller non-LA County communities, local governments that wanted to form CCAs, and they are well along the way. I worked on a resolution for the commission to adopt, which was pretty technical, but it was permitting the utility, Southern California Edison, to procure power for them for these newly formed CCAs before they actually were able to start, because Edison was in the midst of a big transition of its billing system, and it couldn't handle transitioning all of its customers to this new billing system at the same time that it was transitioning customers out of Edison and into the CCA. So that was something I learned about and we could talk about. Pretty technical though. So it's sweeping across California. There's a number of issues here. I think provider of last resort is something of great interest as CCAs take over utility territory. The California legislature adopted a new law to try to provide more guidance on that about a year ago. I know a lot about PCIA, but it's pretty technical, and I'm not sure how much people want to get into that. I was very familiar with PCIA until I left the commission, so there have been developments this year that I'm not quite as plugged into, but that proceeding started, and we can talk about PCIA if folks want to do that. I think I'm just going to, there's a number of other issues, local energy issues that I'm not going to talk about that are quite interesting in California. NEM rates are, a new NEM rate plan is being adopted. There's microgrids, of course, missed opportunities, some feel with the PG&E bankruptcy to take a public ownership or co-op. There's some interesting things happening at East Bay Community Energy and other places with solar and battery on former gas plant sites. Anyway, I think I'm going to leave it there. We can talk about any of these things or anything else people want to talk about in California, but I'm going to drop it right there.
All right, David, thank you. That's a good start. Lynn, do you want to talk a little bit about what's happening in New York and your area?
Sure. So real quick, who I am and what we're up to here on the east end of Long Island. I wear three hats. I'm the president of Peak Power Long Island, which is a 501c3 consulting firm that basically my only client are municipalities. Been in existence since 2016, and basically what we do is design and execute constituent outreach to support New York State and local energy policy. The programs that we build educate the public, motivate them to take action, you know, like adopting home energy efficiency measures, installing rooftop solar, participating in demand management programs, or, you know, if there's an effort ongoing, like recently we drove people to sign a petition demanding that the utility adopt the CCA tariff. A little more on that in a minute. I'm also a volunteer on the town sustainability committee where I advise the town board on energy policy, building code changes, and I also help organize citizen support at public hearings and work with the press to write articles about energy policy the town is trying to progress. And finally, PPLI will be the subcontractor to Juul Community Power, who is the CCA administrator for Southampton when the program launches. PPLI will be responsible for local program management, which is primarily outreach and communications oriented. PPLI, I can take credit for this. Some people say be careful crossing the street. But PPLI brought CCA to Long Island. You know, it was going on all over New York State, but it was not, we never heard of it here until a couple of years ago when I attended a meeting up in Westchester when the very successful Sustainable Westchester, now Westchester Power CCA, which was the first in New York, was highlighting their accomplishments. And I was like, oh, my God, how come we haven't heard of this, and why is no one doing it on Long Island? Well, I learned that really quickly. But right now, there are three towns that have adopted the enabling legislation on Long Island. The environment here is quite unique in New York State, but it's not necessarily unique across the country, as I've learned more about what's going on across the country from participating on these calls, thanks to Sierra. There are 12 zones for electricity in New York State. Southampton is in the one zone that is served by, get this, a self-regulating monopoly called Long Island Power Authority. In New York State, the regulator is the Department of Public Service. However, in the LIPA region, which by the way has 1.1 million ratepayers, all the regulator can do is make recommendations. There's absolutely nothing they can do to enforce whatever recommendations they make. So I live in Southampton, which has around 50,000 households that consume around 800 million kilowatt hours of electricity per year. We, you know, the 1.1 million ratepayers are amongst, by the way, the top five who pay the most expensive electricity rates in the 48 contiguous states. So in my opinion, the genesis of how CCA has evolved and is evolving here is in and of itself a best practice. PPLI has emerged as a trusted source of information given the relationship we've had with the municipality. You know, generally speaking, people trust their elected officials, as you guys know, more than they trust the electric utility, especially after weather events like the ones you're experiencing on the West Coast and have experienced. Plus, last 2 weeks ago, we had a tropical storm sweep through Long Island that left over 100,000 people without power for several days. There's also controversial infrastructure decisions that historically get made without an adequate level of public vetting. So, you know, since the CCA has that relationship and since, you know, working on programs related to a municipality, again, it's just the point being it's just a more trusted source to convince the public to take action. So PPLI's strength is in its ability to reach customers and elected officials through its network. We've been able to harness public opinion to move the needle on policy and programs that benefit the public and the environment. An example of that, you know, working with Juul, is the marketing campaign that we designed and executed just a few months ago that over a four-month period resulted in the CCA tariff getting unanimously adopted by the LIPA board in May. Now, coincidentally, the six other default suppliers for electricity in New York State filed their CCA tariff back in 2016 because the regulator required it. LIPA didn't because, well, I don't know why because, you know, except we do know that they didn't have to, so they didn't, but they have now. And in closing, I just want to say we're working on three parallel efforts right now. These are all live activities. And in my mind, it's illustrative of why CCAs are of such a big interest on Long Island. Because these efforts, they illustrate that we're going to increase resilience of the household. We're going to lower the cost of electricity, and we're going to green the grid. And the three projects are, you know, with some marketing funding from the state, we're launching a residential battery pilot. And at some point, there will be a webinar on that. But there's a lot of changes ongoing that are happening right now, and it was just premature for that to happen this month. The second effort is the CCA administrator, Jewel, who's really such a leader in New York State because they are the only CCA administrator who was authorized to offer CDG programs. So they are working with a developer to generate credits, you know, through CDG that the municipalities within a CCA program can distribute to whomever they want. So, for example, we always talk about the challenge of having an offering for low-income constituents for that LMI community. Well, the CDG offering within the CCA will enable that, you know, that to happen. And then the third and last and perhaps most important thing we're focused on right now is to eliminate the last obstacle in our path. Remember I said we have a monopoly? We don't have a competitive market for electricity on Long Island. So even though we have a CCA and we're proceeding down the path defined by the Public Service Commission to launch a CCA, if we were to issue an RFP tomorrow, we cannot get a competitive price because of some structural hurdles that exist within, you know, the structure of the CCA tariff on Long Island. And so we're working on that. And I'll leave it there. You're welcome to ask questions, certainly, about any one of these things. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, thanks, Lynn. Peter Millman's next, talking about what's happening up in Connecticut.
Hi. My background is in architecture and city planning, a little bit of toy invention, and real estate, residential real estate. I sort of wandered into the clean energy realm in a big way about 4 years ago. I'd been involved with town stuff before that. But going into the state and local levels here in Connecticut heavily about 4 years ago, about 2 years ago, I and some other people started to introduce the idea of CCA at the state legislature. We didn't have much luck the first year. We spent last year building support with legislators and municipalities and statewide organizations, and had some success there. And the legislature was all set in our early session, in our short session this year, earlier in the year, to authorize a CCA study. And then COVID hit, and things went all to pieces. And I decided to petition our Public Utility Regulatory Authority to do a CCA study at that point. And the new chair, Marissa Gillette, who had been in Maryland, accepted that challenge. And part of the reason I decided to go in that direction is that Marissa Gillette is new to Connecticut. She's very young. She's very forward-thinking, I would say. She seemed like a good person to be to do this study. Just for example, she just in the last year has opened up 9 grid modernization dockets looking at all aspects of how the energy sector operates here in Connecticut. Let me just set the stage a little further, though, before going much more into CCA here. Earlier, well, about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection decided that, and the legislature decided that, in order to keep Millstone open, the two nuclear facilities on the coast of Connecticut that provide half of, that generate half of Connecticut's power. Of course, it's, it all goes into ISO New England, but it's 2 gigawatts of capacity at the nuclear plants, decided that they had to let them bid into the renewable energy market here because Dominion, the owner of Millstone, was threatening to close the two facilities if they didn't get a higher price. And amidst a lot of controversy, the legislature acceded to Dominion's blackmail. And just about 2 months ago, the bill began to hit ratepayer bills, and all hell was beginning to break loose. Then Tropical Storm, Eith, hit, and much of Connecticut was down for a week or more without electricity. Over 800,000 households were without power for multiple days. And the legislature, the Public Utility Regulatory Authority, have all reacted with great consternation to all of that. The legislature has started to put together something they're calling the Take Back the Grid Act. Into this fray, CCA is we're trying to put forward CCA as one of the solutions to the multiple problems, the multiple missteps of Eversource and the other utility here in Connecticut, United Illuminating, have done. I have to say that Samuel Golding from California and New Hampshire has been immensely helpful in putting forth the program here. I also want to thank Jerry Braun for his good counsel. And so we are headed towards a second technical meeting for the CCA study docket. We just received 12 interrogatories today. We'll see how it all turns out. But there's just the waters here in Connecticut are very turbulent with talk about breaking up Eversource, talking about performance-based regulatory regimes, and we're trying to insert CCA into this mix. So I think I'll stop at that point.
All right. Sounds like some important things are happening over there. All right, Samuel, you're up.
Thanks, Sarah. Samuel Golding, Community Choice Partners. I've been involved in the community choice industry for the last decade, principally in California, more recently in New Hampshire, and as Peter said, now Connecticut, although I've kind of touched base with key people in all the markets over the past decade. And I'll give a few insights into defining the kind of big picture context and then touch on New Hampshire updates, Connecticut, and a little bit of California. And I won't spend too long on the big picture context because a few weeks ago I actually gave a webinar on this subject for Sierra called The Waking Giant, Community Power Market Design. But in brief, it's very exciting to hear all of these local stakeholders talk about how they're approaching community power and the progress and how it's accelerating and evolving. I would say that the reason why this is happening, the principal drivers behind this rapid growth are kind of political and also fundamental. Politically, the country right now, we see a lot of people getting involved in creating the changes they want to see, and they get involved locally. And it comes from kind of a growing distrust of kind of big government, big corporations, monopoly power, that sort of thing in general. It's fueled by a concern over the climate crisis and wanting to actually start making more meaningful reforms more quickly. And then in the power sector, it's really being fundamentally driven by technology changes. Variable renewables are coming onto the grid. We're building out more capacity every year in distributed energy than we are in centralized energy. And if you understand what that means, it really necessitates an evolution of how kind of who does what in the power sector. We need local communities and government, municipal governments, to become more deeply involved in building out this new infrastructure and storm preparation, planning for resilience. And as one of us mentioned, they're kind of a very trusted partner for people in that capacity. We need more permissionless innovation going on the distributed energy side of the equation. And that requires more more dynamic and nimble regulatory and governmental decisions than we designed the power sector to deliver up till this point. Similarly, we need more unified and logical retail market structures, because, you know, a solar company shouldn't have to deal with different rules, like radically different rules, depending on which state or utility territory they're trying to engage customers in. I just, you know, there's all these things that don't make sense. And I think the big picture is that a lot of people are starting to realize that monopoly utilities that are regulated by the state should be quarantined to the distribution grid, and we should modernize their business model to be more performance-based. And then, you know, they shouldn't have control over what customers are allowed to do. There needs to be enabling mechanisms for those reforms to actually happen in practice, and community power is a key enabling mechanism that kind of checks all of those boxes. It engages the community, it teaches them about the power sector, gives them skin in the game, gives them a budget to build local institutional capacity. They can make decisions really rapidly about what's best for their community and customers. They're trusted by their community to do that. And they can work together to explain and see through more systemic reforms to the market, whether that's by lobbying the legislature or by engaging regulators or by kind of starting to do it a better way as to prove how the larger market should function. So in New Hampshire, beginning about a year ago, when they were passing community power legislation, we started framing community power in all those ways, that we were going to work together as communities to standardize the market. And we were going to take over control of the retail side of the business from the utilities, not just the wholesale side of the business. So we were going to advance grid modernization, working with the utilities, put in the right sorts of meters, using the data, streamlining the business rules, making sure the billing system could accommodate all of these new innovations and so on and so forth. And we were going to do that not just on an individual community power territory level, but across the entire state. And to do that, we were going to form a joint action agency, a statewide shared services agency that all of these community power programs could jointly govern and use to modernize, to offer very modern, very sophisticated services to everybody. Fast forward about a year, we have a core group of four municipalities that are about to finalize that joint action agreement to create the agency. They're about to hire lawyers to help them finalize that, and they want to adopt it next month. There's a high degree of interest in municipalities around the state for joining the agency. We hosted our organizing group here hosted a summit to discuss that and got about 90 people, elected officials, staff, energy committee members, all in a virtual room to discuss the initiatives. And if you look at kind of what they represent, it's a quarter of the state's electrical load that's currently served by the monopoly utilities. And so we're going to launch next year. There's three utilities in New Hampshire. We're going to be larger than the smallest utility and then rapidly grow to be larger than the second largest. So it's emerging as a very credible, very politically cohesive, large load serving entity. We're also going through the rule development process with the commission right now. And, you know, unsurprisingly, the commission is not, they're really focused on the wholesale aspects of community power and less so on transitioning retail services from the utilities to the community.
I'm going to have lunch on Saturday with somebody out at Clinton Beach, and he's going to bring his wife. Would you like to join us? They're very cool
people. Somebody needs to mute their phone.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I hope you enjoy the drive. Where was that? Oh, yeah, we're going through the rural development process. And so we're encountering this opposition that I see everywhere, actually, where, and again, I think this is a major shift in people's consciousness, is they're starting to realize utilities shouldn't be in charge of retail services to customers, but the entire professional culture of most electricity markets across the country, and like that's the way they've been operating for years. And so it's a difficult discussion to have in terms of how this would practically work and why it needs to work. So we're in the thick of that right now in New Hampshire. Similarly, in Connecticut, as Peter mentioned, we've been framing community power as this practical, actionable enabling mechanism for this sort of structural change. And we've already encountered quite a few people who, you know, this is a foreign concept to them. And so there's that educational process that's playing out right now. I've been enjoying it a lot, as an aside, just because it solves so many problems and it makes a lot of sense. So when you explain it in the right way to people, people kind of get excited about it and start thinking more creatively about how to solve the problems of the power sector by reforming the structure of the market and who does what. California is kind of falling apart at the seams right now, in my opinion, partially because of this. And they didn't, you know, in the early days when they passed the community choice law in California, the utilities fought like heck to include language in there that preserved their monopoly control over the retail side. So, what, you know, the California community choice industry is the most sophisticated operationally of any market. But at the same time, they are running into very hard limits on the sorts of innovation that they can do because the utility by law is still in charge of meter communications, data management, the billing system, and a lot of customer care functions and programs. So at some point, you know, the practical implication of that is we just had rolling blackouts for a number of reasons in California. But one of those is that we have a lot of dispatchable demand-side technologies, things like smart thermostats and water heater switches and building management control systems and so on and so forth. But not a lot of it is being dispatched in response to price signals, and that's not really the way the California market is set up. And so it's like we have a very flexible fleet of devices on the customer side that have been somewhat decoupled from the wholesale side. And so when the wholesale side is in trouble, the retail side doesn't respond as quickly or as in a targeted way as it could be. And I think a big part of that is community choice agencies haven't been given control over the back office to make that sort of innovation happen in an integrated fashion. So I'm going to be very curious if this latest blackout is the thing that finally changes people's opinions in California and gets them to focus on these more structural issues there as well. I guess I'll leave it there, Sierra.
All right. Okay, anybody who would like to comment, especially the presenters, if you'd like to ask questions of each other, go ahead, and then we'll open it up to everybody.
Hi, it's Lena. I'd like to ask.
Can I ask a question
of Sandy?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
This last comment you made about you have this flexible fleet of dispatchable resources, but they're not set up to respond to price signals. Are there any programs at all in California where they're, you know, trading capacity from, you know, like a battery in a household aggregated together into some wholesale market?
There are. It's not totally divorced from the wholesale side, but the wholesale kind of the CAISO has had various products and markets for demand-side assets to participate in, but they haven't seen a lot of growth in the last few years. They've been working on that. But a lot of the barriers there get traced back to the retail side. There's a proliferation of utility programs and some third-party programs that are price responsive in various regards, but a lot of them are, you know, administratively complex. It's not a very streamlined market at all, so it's kind of hard to participate in. The rules don't really lead to optimizing the use of these assets across the different horizontal segments of the power sector. So it's kind of clumsy compared to what it could be under a more streamlined market structure.
Do you have any comments?
I have a question. This is Peter. I have a question for Lynn. So I am only peripherally familiar with the New York CCA programs. I know who Juul is, and I know what Westchester Power is, and know some of the people there a little bit. I'm not clear how much of the how much beyond procurement and buying RECs is on the table, is on the agenda for the New York CCAs, and I'm sure that they're all different. But how much more than that are you aiming to do as a CCA?
Well, I can't speak to what's happening across the state. Like I said, you know, Long Island, we are surrounded by water. We have congestion issues. Where I happen to live on the South Fork of Long Island is a massive load pocket. We have a single point of failure, one cable across the canal all the way out to the end of the island. And, you know, it's like Christmas tree lights. So, you know, we we actually CCA was a later thought. We've been working on demand management and energy efficiency and, you know, designing microgrids and, you know, competing. Like the state has, you know, this NYSERDA in New York State is the entity that has the funding to motivate investment and change. So NYSERDA, for example, ran a program a couple of years ago called the New York Prize, where, you know, it was a series of phases that municipalities could submit with consultants' assistance. In fact, the consultants pretty much did the proposals to build microgrids. So, you know, the CCA is really dovetailing off those studies. But CDG, you know, working with a CCA administrator who is authorized to execute CDG in conjunction, you know, in an opt-out model through CCA to alleviate the developer of the cost and risk of, you know, having off-takers is a tremendous mechanism to encourage local development of distributed energy resources. So all of a sudden, you know, doing a project with a municipality, putting a large solar array on a landfill, you know, has a whole different set of benefits to it. You know, other brownfield sites, of which there are many on Long Island, same thing. So the CCA can facilitate those type projects. And I guess this morning I was actually on the phone with the CEO of the company, and I think he said to me something like he saw $2 billion, it was a big number, you know, worth of, just looking here in my notes from this morning, there's just an enormous amount of opportunity to develop projects on Long Island that would be local to the within the zone, you know, in which the CCA would operate, and therefore there's a less of a dependence on buying RECs, you know, for projects that are going on elsewhere. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. So it sounds like CCAs are you're picturing them being used to accelerate a process and focus a process of a community distributed generation that is already underway but needs to go further. Is that fair?
Yeah, and it also ties in all the issues or opportunities that Samuel, you know, just covered, you know, getting community involvement, you know, dealing community ownership and, you know, the trust issue, you know, the lack of community involvement, you know, infrastructure shows up. We had a big brouhaha on Long Island. We have multiple brouhahas on any given moment. You know, where is the cable going to land for the offshore wind farm and, you know, or what about these monster poles that showed up on a weekend putting in a new transmission line that the community didn't know about? You know, this kind of stuff happens on a regular basis. Anyway, I'll leave it there.
Is there any thought of doing a shared action agency or joint action agency, as Samuel's described, for New Hampshire, linking together CCA so that...
You know, I haven't heard of that. What's happening, though, you know, as any normal, you know, we are getting together, like on Monday, one of the guys from Westchester is coming down here to meet with me to talk about how we can work together on this demand response pilot involving batteries, residential and batteries going into small businesses. You know, So there's informal, you know, kind of getting together with people that you know to share best practices and you know, what's been successful. I was on that call yesterday, and I think that structure that was proposed and what Samuel, what actually, who talked about it just now in New Hampshire? Maybe it was Samuel. That sounds, I don't know that that's happening in New York State, but I sure would love to tap into it if, in fact, you know, it's, there's talk of that.
Yeah, I can give you some materials, and Peter and I are creating more to explain it in a new context. My webinar for Sierra a few weeks ago covers a bunch of that.
Yeah, there is something called the Climate Leadership and Climate Protection Act, which was adopted this year, and there is a committee of energy professionals and academics that have been assigned to that. It's like a task force, I guess. And they're supposed to, I don't know what they're supposed to do, but it sounds like, well, they're supposed
Lynn,
to.
Lynn and Samuel, I want to break in right now, and I need to open this up for other people to talk and ask questions as well before we get too deeply into that. So is there anybody else here that would like to add anything to the conversation, Craig, or anybody?
I'm having to drop off right now, Sierra, and I apologize again for when I did chime in earlier. I didn't mean to. My apologies.
Oh, no problem. Anybody else here? You have any comments, thoughts? Okay, we'll continue. Dave Duperreault, any thoughts about this? David?
Well, yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. I'm not sure I have a lot I want to offer about it, but Samuel, I was very interested in your perspective on what's happening in California. And I have heard this from a number of other folks. I spoke today with Irene Musin, who was an administrative law judge at the commission and in private practice, and for a while was the general counsel at the California CCA, which is a really wonderful organization in my view. It, it's not an agency, of course, but it is sort of a trade association, lobbying group, advocacy organization for CCAs in California, and has, I think most of the CCAs are members, and it is a very effective advocate on behalf of CCAs, effective at least in making the arguments. And the commission doesn't seem to listen to the arguments or adopt them, certainly. So Irene is back in private practice now. I also spoke with Beth Kelly, who was general counsel, one of the early employees at Marin, one of the big pioneers, of course, nationally and in California, and worked with Marin through its first financing and many years, and she's had her own solo practice for a year or two now in San Francisco. And I don't want to speak for them, but I will say that I've heard from a number of folks the frustration that you referred to, Samuel, about the laws and the regulatory structure that is making it difficult for CCAs to realize the promise that it sounds like you're going to be achieving in New Hampshire. I mean, certainly there's a huge adoption across the state, and as I mentioned, it's accelerating. Well, I don't know if it's accelerating, but it's continuing at a high pace. But it is very limited by the structures we have for resource adequacy, provider of last resort, the entire scheme, the legal and regulatory scheme was set up to manage investor-owned utilities that are monopolies. And as we transition away from that model, the legislature has not given the commission enough ability to adapt, I think, and also the commission itself, candidly, I think is invested sort of in the existing structure as well. And I've they're concerned about keeping the lights on, and they do it within the structure that they have and then they know, I think. And I'll just leave it at that. So, Samuel, yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's too much central control. It's a culture of reflexive central control at the commission at this point. And as you said, you know, they try and focus on keeping the lights on, and guess what? Their approach doesn't work. And so that's the kind of this moment of reckoning coming down the line for the second time in California. And I'm hoping that, you know, the last time this happened, it led to a whole lot of bad decisions that actually didn't address the structural problems in California. And what's different now is that we have, 18 operating community power agencies with 200 government staff actually operating them, and a variety of very sophisticated competitive vendors providing the operations and information, and thousands of local elected officials affiliated with that, because those 18 agencies represent 200 governments. And so there's actually a whole segment of legitimate, informed government involved in these discussions about, okay, what's going wrong and how do we fix it, that didn't exist 20 years ago. So I'm hoping that we, you know, all the community choice agencies in California really leverage this moment and lead the debate on what needs to change and see it through. I think a big part of that is, as CalCCA has been recently articulating, taking a hard look at what we allow utilities to do and what we, how we are going to quarantine them to the distribution grid so that they can focus on their job and we can focus on helping communities and customers be more resilient and making the system function more logically.
Yeah, that's.
Anybody else?
I agree, and that this is David. I agree, and we're up to 21 CCAs, and with all the other LSEs, the other load-serving entities that are basically delivering wholesale power directly to large users, they're private businesses doing that, but bypassing the utilities and the CCAs and delivering. Cheaper power to large commercial, industrial, and other users. You're right.
Yeah, and David, I wrote a whole series of regulatory filings for UCAN in the PCI reform proceeding that explains all this in a lot of detail that I'll send you. And it points out that direct access, they can assume control over metering and billing and all the rest. And so as a consequence, you know, if you're Microsoft and you have a data center, if you're on direct access, you are free to, you know, shift your load, put in batteries, play in the market however you want. If you're on a CCA, you're still limited to what the utilities are willing to do to help you achieve those goals, which isn't much, right? And I'll send that to you. It also includes a case study written by a cold storage warehouse talking about the inability to flex their demand in various, you know, under CCA service, under direct access, under utility service. So I'll send that to you.
Samuel, why don't you go ahead and send that to me, and I'll distribute it to the group tomorrow when I send out the recordings of these calls.
Okay, it's pretty technical. But
yeah, actually, I'd like to forward it to the we're having these conversations over similar topics with our utility now and escalating the latest obstacle in our path. So thank you, Sierra. That would be useful to have.
Okay.
I'll see if I can get it out this afternoon. I might be able to do that.
Okay.
All right, we have a couple minutes left. I'm going to take a second here to talk about what's coming up. We have a couple conference calls next week again. in September. And on Wednesday, September 2nd, we're talking about renewable energy on agricultural land. That's going to be really interesting. There's some things happening in agricultural land that I had no idea. Barriers to solar, for instance. And Larissa, on Thursday, September 3rd, is going to summarize Peter Fox Tenner's book, Power After Carbon, and have a discussion about that. And Solomon Flank, Rick Brown, oh, I think Brooke said he couldn't make it. Bear Brown and Craig are going to be on that call. And then Tuesday is another webinar. Cleaner Rob's going to talk about analysis of renewable energy and procurement options for municipalities. And I'm not sure everybody's getting my emails or calendar invitations, so I'm going to turn it around so that when people receive something, they have to reply if they got it, so I can get a better idea if people are actually getting this information. I know some of you are, but I'm not sure everybody is. So it's been a frustrating part of my life is dealing with technology issues that don't work. So anyhow, anybody else right now? We have about a minute left. Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and end the call, and Samuel will send me that information, and we'll go ahead and do that. And I'll send it out to you guys and probably get the recordings up this afternoon, if not then, for sure tomorrow. And thanks, everybody, for coming. Thanks to the panelists for, yet again, an interesting and worthwhile conversation. And hope to see you next time.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.